Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
This may sound like a curious choice for our good news segment, but my next guest says, I had an injury, but I still believe in God. He's quite a character. So imagine this scenario. You're 25, married just 9 months, a vibrant, vigorous outdoors type working in outdoor education for kids on Christian camps. Life is great. And then one simple mishap with an earth ball that could really happen to anyone changes everything, and you'd be forgiven for asking, what was God doing? Where was he? This is the story of Anthony Chuck, known unsurprisingly to his friends as Chucky, of course, we're in Australia, who I'm so glad to say joins us on Open House. Chucky, welcome.
Thanks, Lee.
It's great to see you, Anthony. Take us back to your work pre-accident. Tell us what you were doing and why you were doing that.
I became a Christian on outdoor education camps, or on holiday camps, Camp Howard as unknown back in those days. In 2004, I started working on those camps full time. Pre that, for 1 year I was at uni, I wasn't sure where my life was going. I didn't enjoy uni, and I decided, I think working for God's not a bad idea. So I applied to work on the Horizon Educational Camps, and so I got a job down there. Started work 2004, and since then have been working for YouthWorks.
So why working for God? Why was that a good idea?
I became a Christian on outdoor education camps. I wanted to see kids become Christians at outdoor education camps, and I know that camping ministry is a very important part in the role in people's lives, and I believe it changes people's lives on the camp, and I thought it's a great way to serve God.
At what stage did you take that step into Christian faith?
I became a Christian on a holiday camp in year 8. One of the leaders challenged me of why I kept coming to these camps, because I'd been going for quite a few years, and I told him honestly, I enjoyed it for the fun. He asked me about, what about the Christian content? I said, oh yeah, it's nice. I've grown up going to church, so I understood it all. He asked me, does it mean anything? I said, not really. He sat me down. He took me through the gospel. He said, it needs to mean something to you. I sat there. I thought about it for a little while, and then I thought, right, I think I better start listening to this. So we prayed together. Didn't happen overnight. I didn't go back home a fully fired up Christian. It took a few years for me to really work into it, to really make the commitment, for it to really change my whole life. And from there, over God's working over a few years, I really started to trust more and more in God.
When you say the gospel, what does that mean in your mind, and what was it that so transformed your life?
It was the gospel of grace, to really understand that Jesus had died, had rose again for me, and the fact that I didn't have to do anything to earn it. It was free. I didn't really understand the concept of free, it being a free gift for me. I just thought, oh yeah, I could probably do a few good things. I could probably work for it here and there. I could please God by going to church and doing those sorts of things, but it didn't make any difference in my everyday life.
And it was personal.
It was very personal. I needed to accept it for myself, not just say, oh yeah, we go to church, my parents go to church, I tag along with them, that's fantastic. But for me to accept it and for it to work out through my whole life, for me to go to school, become the example, for me in everything I do, my words, my actions.
So your life, as I said at the top, was great.
Yes.
Outdoor education, everything's going along swimmingly.
I love my job. I love working in the outdoors. I love the sunshine. I love the summer. I love chatting to kids about God.
Newly married.
Yes, 9 months. Very exciting time. They often say your first year of marriage is like the honeymoon stage the whole year.
Too right. Then comes Saturday, September 12, 2009. Take us through what happened that day.
That day, we had a bucks party for one of the guys who we used to work with down at YouthWorks. He invited us up. The idea was to spend the whole weekend up there, so we drove up that morning. We arrived at his place around 11 o'clock and we went down to the local park where we pulled out a giant earth ball. Now, for those of you who don't know what an earth ball is, it's like a giant soccer ball. So I'm about 6 foot tall when I stand up, fully inflated. The ball came up to about my shoulder. So you get the idea. It's a pretty large ball. The second game we started playing was the idea where we're mucking around with friends where we'd lie on top of it and we'd get two guys to run in from either side to spring you up into the air, just a bit of fun. I was about the sixth or seventh person to have a go, so came around to my turn and I said, why not? Hop straight on. The guys ran in, I went up, and unfortunately, I came down on the back of my neck doing a spinal cord injury, what they call stretch and bruising the spinal cord. Unfortunately, everyone else came out on down on their feet, so I didn't think two ways about it. And I tell people, if I hadn't got injured, I would have hopped straight back on that ball.
Yes. So what happened in that moment?
That moment, I didn't black out, so I didn't pass out at all. I don't remember 100% of the stuff. The boys said I came down screaming. I only remember shouting a little bit, but they say I came down and screamed for a little while. The first thing to hit me was the fact that I knew I had done something very serious. I couldn't move anything. The boys around me, a lot of whom I work with, knew straight away, seeing as though we had all done first aid, that I had done something pretty terrible. The boys snapped into action, which is pretty good. They helped stabilize my neck. They didn't move me. They didn't touch me apart from holding my head still. They got some towels. They took off their shirts. They found whatever they could and they stabilized me straight away. One of the boys hopped on the mobile phone, called the ambulance straight away. But because I was still conscious, I was barking instructions at a couple of boys. My role down at work at that time was a team leader. So I was in charge of around anywhere between 8 to 12 instructors at any time, and I was used to telling people what to do in emergency situations. So I was telling one of the boys to pick up my mobile phone, who to call. I had the presence of mind not to call my wife straight away because I thought she would freak out, so yes, to speak. When we got married, she was 21, and so she was still 21 at that time, and I didn't know how she would react. So I told one of the boys, you need to call the mother-in-law first. And that happened. I told him how to use my phone, how to dial it up, what number he was looking for, what name I'd saved her under.
I can't believe your presence of mind and such clarity, and you're lying there.
Yeah, on the ground. It was funny because one of the boys said, don't move, and I said, I can't. I said, I don't even know if I've weed my pants sort of thing. I can't feel anything. But I really think God gave me a clear sense of mind.
You weren't panicking?
At that stage, no. At that stage, I was on the ground. I knew I'd done something injured, but because I couldn't move anything, I couldn't do anything about it, God gave me a clear mind, a sense of peace. The boys around me instantly started praying for me. I prayed as well. We all prayed out loud together while we're waiting for the ambulance, and a sense of peace and understanding, which only God can give, came over all of us.
Not fearful?
No, not at that stage. By about half an hour later, after the ambulance had arrived, and while we're waiting for the helicopter to come, I started having difficulty in breathing, and that's when I started getting a bit more fearful.
Yes, I'm sure. So tell us something of the coming days. What happened?
Coming days after that, well, that night I went straight into surgery and then woke up the next day, and that was hard. The realization of what you've done really kicked in. That's when I became more fearful because you're back to an infant stage. You can't do anything for yourself. You can't feed yourself. You can't move. You can't go to the toilet by yourself. But your mind is fully aware that you can't do any of this. And that was the hardest thing to understand. I could lie there. I could look around. I had a neck brace on, so I couldn't turn my head. I couldn't even sit up in bed past 30 degrees. so I was staring at the ceiling most of the time, but you're fully aware that you've really done a serious injury.
On Open House, we're with Anthony Chuck. Anthony, when do they tell you that you're a quadriplegic?
The doctors are very good. They tell you almost straight away. They told Mel a whole lot more of what was going on, but they told me almost straight away that I was injured once I woke up post-injury. The doctors and the surgeons come down and see you in the emergency before you go in for surgery, asking you questions and telling you what they're going to do with your surgery. But they don't fully tell you that you're going to be a quadriplegic until afterwards. But you do figure it out for yourself pretty quickly.
Yeah. What was Mel's reaction, your wife, of 9 months again?
Again, God gave her an amazing sense of peace. If you had told me 9 months into your marriage this is going to happen and they asked you the question, how is Mel going to react? I would have said she would have completely flipped out. But no, once she got the phone call, she continued to do the dishwashing. She continued to hang up the clothes. And then our next door neighbor, who where we live down on the campsites, who's a Christian lady as well, she came over and just sat with Mel. God gave her a massive sense of peace and understanding. It wasn't until we got to the hospital where she was with family. So her parents came and picked her up, drove her up to the hospital, that she started getting a bit more worried. And she tells me, I'm pretty confident, that night with her mum is where she broke down a bit more in that sense. But we all have to go through a bit of grieving.
Who would blame her?
No, not at all.
Were you thinking at all, in the maze of all this, no doubt, anything of the future?
Yes, very much so. I was very scared about the future. Not just about my future. I was struggling to see why God had allowed this to happen and what the purpose for my life would be. But I was also scared for Mel. We had been married 9 months. Had I stuffed up her future as well? And I had a massive sense of guilt in that as well. Because you've married a 21-year-old vibrant girl and you think, wow, have I stuffed up her life as well? And so in the weeks that followed injury, we had to have a conversation because I felt so guilty. It was one of those things where I had to say to her, I know we're Christians. I know marriage vows mean something to us, but if you want to leave, you can. But God has been great. She took her vows very seriously and we're still together. She stayed amazingly strong.
So in reply to your question, what was God doing? Where was God? What answer do you come up with?
I can see how God has worked amazingly through my life. I can see the purpose in my life. I think we look in the Bible and we see the story of the paraplegic where his friends lower the paraplegic through the roof. What does God say to him first off? He says, son, your sins are forgiven. And for me, that is so true. My greatest need and all of our greatest needs are for our sins to be forgiven first and foremost. Then he says to him, get up and walk. So I can see and I can know and I can have assurance that my sins are forgiven. So for me at the moment, 80 years I've got left on this earth, thereabouts. So to me, 80 years in a wheelchair is nothing compared to eternity with God in heaven. And that eternity will hopefully be me walking around, but all I know is being in the presence of God, I will be filled with so much joy. So whether I'm in a wheelchair or not in heaven, it won't make any difference.
It's quite a perspective to have. I can imagine there are some people out there saying or thinking, how can this guy be so clear and ordered and even optimistic? What would you say?
I would say that God is great. He gave me this sense of clarity. He gave me this sense of perspective. He gave me the fact that I know him. He brought me into relationship with him. And the promise of what Jesus says in the Bible, that he will hold me in his hands and never let me go, rings true. But I do go through moments of doubt. I do go through questioning. I do struggle with it at some times. But every time God either puts someone in my path who will bring me back to him, he will allow me to speak to people I still work down with YouthWorks. I still chat with kids about his love. And it just brings it all home to me every single time.
That was the thing I was just going to get to. You find yourself now doing much the same kind of things with Christian youth camps, although understandably, as a quadriplegic, very differently. You're now the Disabilities Ministry Coordinator with YouthWorks. Doing what?
So my bosses at YouthWorks came to me and said, Chuck, we want to talk about a job for you. So they were very gracious to begin with. And we nutted out a job. So Disability Ministry Coordinator, it means I look after kids with disabilities when they come down to camp. We find that there's a lot of kids with disabilities who are in mainstream schools, and we don't want a disability to stop a child coming down to camp. Everybody deserves to hear the gospel, and just because they may not be able to participate in activity, that might be a hindrance to them coming down on camp. So I will chat with the parents, I will chat with the school about what activities they can do, about how we can look after them on camp, and we'll get them down on camp. So I've had the amazing privilege of being able to learn how to abseil in my wheelchair, how to do canoeing, how we would do sailing, how we would do our outdoor activities down at work, so that when these kids come down, and we've had a few of them, how they can fully participate in camp, not just sit there and watch their friends do it.
Mate, you're a legend. Oh. You are an absolute legend. How do you explain, though, the goodness or the sovereignty of God to those kids on a Christian camp? From the point of view of your disability, kids who may think, oh, God's always just going to give me a great life. What do you say to them?
First off, Jesus or God, they never promise that your life is going to be carefree. And I tell people, everybody is going to go through trials in their life. My trial is just very obvious. You look at me and people go, oh, I know what to pray for. Whereas you don't know what's going to happen in your life.
Yes.
Everybody goes through hard things. And part of me pities the people who go through things like depression, who suffer silently without any support. But God's love is great. So what do I tell kids? God loves them. God really does. Let's look what Jesus has done on the cross. Let's look at what he's done for us. And let's know that God does not give us things that we can't handle.
I'm struck by how determined you are and optimistic you are. You are clearly, to me, a glass half full bloke.
Yeah, that's the way a lot of people have always described it to me. Yeah. I'll give you the example of when I was first in hospital. 2 weeks after I got injured, we had a secular psychiatrist just come in and start chatting to me. She asked Mel to leave the room, so Mel went out to the waiting room, and she was chatting to me about life and where I see things going on. After that interview, she went out to Mel, who was in the waiting room, and she said to Mel, I think your husband's in denial. Mel just said, no, that's just the way he is. He's always been positive. And that's a gift I think God has given me, and it rings true. God has allowed me to handle this in a way that I would never have thought of being able to handle it.
Notwithstanding the times that are tough. You would never deny that.
No, yes. Definitely not. There are definitely tough times.
Yeah. You say that Mel and you have created a new kind of normal.
Mm.
What's that like?
That's interesting. So, for example, the father-in-law, when we moved into a house, built me a ramp so that I could get into the house. But the ramp just so happened that it was at the right height for me to be able to barbecue. So I will try and cook as much on the barbecue as I can. So we'll try and share the cooking out.
Yeah.
We've just bought different things. So instead of buying a top loader washing machine, we've bought a front loader. So I'll try and do the laundry as much as possible. We try and share as much as we can. Mel has learned how to do a whole bunch of different things. So she now mows the lawn, but we only have a small strip of patch at the back. We've got a great neighbor who mows our front lawn. We work things out in a different way. If there's something that I can't do, then we ask for help. Mel is a very hands-on sort of person, and she loves learning how to do things. So the other night, we sat by the car and I taught her how to change the tire in the car, and she absolutely loved it. She's fantastic.
Hard to ask for help sometimes.
Yes, that is one of the biggest learning things I've had to do. Before I got injured, I was a very independent sort of person. I was a team leader at work, so I was used to giving out the instructions. I wasn't very good at asking for help. If there was something that needed doing, I would work to all hours at night. Mel commented that she didn't always see me too much, and I found it hard asking for help. But this has made me learn to ask for help, and that has very much improved my prayer life. When you pray to God, you ask for things. Before, I didn't pray as much as I should have. I wouldn't say that I even pray to God 3 times a day. I would struggle reaching that figure. But lying in a hospital bed, you have a lot of time to pray.
Yes.
And I was in a hospital bed for a good 4 weeks before I could really sit up and move out a lot. And so that habit of praying a lot has really continued post-hospital, post-injury, and even to this day.
It's almost a cliche question to ask you what the whole experience has taught you, but I want to know this. What kind of things have you learned that you may never have got before or without this accident?
There are a lot of things in your life which you go through and you think, I think I'll be okay in this situation. But really, until you go through that sort of situation, you don't know how you would handle it. So, like I said before, it's taught me to ask for help a lot more. It's taught me to rely on God and not through my own strength. That was a big issue in my life. It has taught me that life on this earth is short. And so being able to chat to people about God and really tell them about the gospel, we need to do it now. We can't put it off tomorrow. The doctors tell me if I had injured myself an inch higher up my neck, there's a possibility I wouldn't be here today. And I know far too many people in this world who don't believe in Jesus. And I would have been angry at myself almost if I had passed away without telling people about Jesus. So for me, my loved ones who I know, my family who I know, who don't believe in Jesus, it's made me really start to chat to them about Jesus, talk to them about his love, not trying to pressure them in any way, but telling them about what I believe. And they can also see it now that what I believe is matching up with my actions. Well, at least I hope so. I'm not perfect. I don't do it every time, but that's what I try and aim to do. So not every conversation is about God, but when they ask me about work, I tell them about the lives that Jesus has changed down at the campsites. They know that the hope I have and the optimism I have and all the gifts that I have are from God and not through my own strength.
And you've had a great opportunity to have a chat with a lot of new friends on Open House.
Yeah.
Anthony Chuck, it's an absolute inspiration and pleasure meeting you. Thank you so much for sharing your life and chatting with us on Open House.
Thanks for that, Lee.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.